How I look at that is, you know, everything that I perceive isn't necessarily reality, right? My sponsor says it like this. He says, you know, when I first came into AA, you know, I heard a lot of stuff, right? You know, all the slogans and the things we hear. And he said, there may well have been a very strong recovery message, but in order for there to be a message, right, it has to be received. And I'm the receiver. So that means it has to go through here. And so he said, I sometimes filter out what I want to hear and what I don't want to hear. And that's been the story of my life, you know, since as early as I can remember. You know, I had my perception of reality, and then there was the truth. And somehow, you know, some way in between there was, you know. Prior to a drink of alcohol, right, how does alcoholism crop up? Like, you know, somebody once said in a meeting, which really resonated with me, I hadn't heard it before, it was in the last couple of years, and it really is my experience, you know. He said that alcoholism doesn't come in bottles, it comes in people. And what he meant by that was that the disease centers in the mind. And really, how I can see that kind of cropping up in my early life is like from a very early age. I didn't know it at the time, but I was afraid. And how I knew I was afraid is that, so there's a line in AA Comes of Age, which is written by Bill W., our co-founder, and it says, you know, something along the lines of this. I'm sure I'm paraphrasing, but he says, you know, I had to present to the world that I was the number one man because inside I felt the least of God's kids. And you could describe me to a T just by that statement, right? And so in the book, it describes, you know, self-confidence for us was a total liability. You know, it didn't solve the fear problem. And when it made us cocky, it was worse. And so that's how I responded to being full of fear early in life, right? I developed a stage character, who I thought you wanted me to be, based on my perception of, you know, what I determined you thought was, you know, acceptable, and so I quickly molded myself to be that, and you know, that brought me about to the gates of insanity and death. And about 12 years old, I started feeling disconnected, and sighed. Something was wrong, right? And I didn't know what that was, and I really felt like I was the only one that had that prior to getting to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll tell you, right, one of my old-timers is a guy named Ross M., and he's still alive today. He got sober in the 70s, and he described that same feeling, and he said how he responded to it was that he learned how to bluff. I've heard it said, I've learned how to act as if, right? And I was acting as if up until I took my first drink of alcohol. And I remember being about 15 years old. It's 1996, right? I'm listening to all the stuff that was on the radio at that time, right? I mean, prior to this, I'm a really shy, awkward kid. You know, restlessness, irritability, and discontentment was my lot. And I spent a lot of time in my room playing guitar and listening to CDs on the boombox and teaching myself how to play, you know, instruments and stuff, and you know, all the great stuff from the 90s. The time that I was listening to was what I was listening to. And, you know, I just was a wacky kid, man, from the early, you know. My idea of fun was stealing my sister's toys, lighting them on fire, and spinning them around and throwing them up in the air, you know. And other kids were just like, what is wrong with you, you know? And, you know, I just had a different idea of what was fun and what was exciting. I mean, you know, and I mean, I sought out. Just to express like how, I don't know, I just felt this, like, I'm just weird, I'm like wound tight, and I'm just here to like have fun, and like life is, you know, I'm just gonna figure out how to like express it, and I'll figure it out. And you know, kind of weird stuff up until that point. I remember I was, you know, as a young child, as a baby, I had asthma really bad, and they used to hook me up to this machine to like breathe, and my mom would have me on her lap, you know, hooked up to this machine and stuff. And, you know, so of course we had a lot of inhalers in the house. I just like puffed the inhaler like a bunch of times until I get a buzz, you know, like anything to kind of take me out of myself prior to finding alcohol. But But this particular night, you know, a couple of friends and I had stolen some alcohol from our parents' liquor cabinet, you know. And we didn't know anything about drinking. And I'll tell you, I still don't know anything about drinking. I know that it makes me feel good, and I know that once I start, I can't stop. And that's the most important thing that I know about alcohol. But, you know, we mixed all a bunch of this stuff together in a maple syrup jug, you know, that had the top cut off of it. And it was whiskey, vodka, rum, gin, brandy, wine, cognac, like limoncello, right? Just like any, just all the little bits off the bottles, you know, mix it all together. And this stuff was nasty. It was horrible. Burned my throat. I thought, oh, this is awful. Why would anybody drink this? Until I felt the effect. And I was like, wow, okay. And I can tell you, man, there was a lot of conversation going on. We were chatting. We were having fun. And it just seemed like the voices sort of just faded out, right? And it got quiet. And like my shoulders dropped. And like my buck teeth went right back in, you know? And my weird cowlick thing in my hair that was always sticking up funny. In the front and in the back, you know, just sort of straightened right out. And I was okay, you know. Nothing ever did that for me prior to that. Nothing ever did that for me up until the time I got into Alcoholics Anonymous and had this spiritual awakening that we describe as it was the result of taking these 12 steps. And you know, I mean, I was lit up. I was lit up. And you could no more have pulled me away from that effect. And I don't know, you know. I mean, there's no way I was going back once I felt that effect. And I mean, of course, you know, at that time, at least for me, in my teenage years, you know, alcohol is not easy to get, right? I'm 42 years old, so you can do the math. When I'm 15 years old, I look about 10, you know. Mm-hmm. It seems like the older I get, just kind of stay the same, and the gap between how old you think I am and how old I really am just sort of grows. And I mean, I just sort of get grayer and fatter, but look the same, you know. And you know, I didn't care about any of that stuff after I had the effect produced by alcohol, right? Nothing changed about me, but my perception shifted, right? Like I could be at ease, at peace, you know. I mean, everything, you know, was like complete psychic change. Psychic, when I read that in the doctor's opinion, I thought that meant like psychological. And it was described to me as not psychological, but pertaining to the soul, right? There was like a shift in my soul. And I had that when I drank alcohol and I chased it. I mean, who wouldn't, you know, if you felt the effect like I felt the effect, I mean, nothing did anything like that for me to this, you know, nothing. And of course, when you drink like that, right, like I do, like we do, consequences come quickly, right? And it's pretty disturbing to, you know, my mother and father who don't have that reaction to alcohol, right? You know, for them, at least at the time, how I perceived it was that they had a normal reaction, right? They had a couple gin and tonics, right? Maybe one or two, right? They'd feel a little effect. Mom, if she ever drank, right, maybe one glass of wine at dinner, you know, once every month, if she felt like it. My dad, a little bit more, you know, here and there. Never displayed drunkenness that I could ever see in any of the times, right, that I witnessed them drink. And I could see now, alcohol, what I learned, alcohol does something to everyone that drinks it, right? It produces an effect in anyone who drinks enough alcohol is going to feel the effect produced by alcohol, hands down. But I learned that only, at least in my experience, what it does for me doesn't necessarily do to the average tempered drinker. The shift in perception that comes, you know, from taking a couple drinks. you know, and I mean, I look back on my drinking experience and I quickly gravitated towards people who drank like me. I mean, it was very rare that I found somebody who wasn't partying in those early days, you know, and doing the keg parties and the field parties and riding around on smoke rides and, you know, doing all that stuff we were doing in the 90s. But there was something different about me in the way that I reacted to alcohol. And the best way I can describe it is like, man, just getting in the car and just being like, you know, And I'm at this point in time, I'm already, you know, full-blown alcoholic, and just, you know, doing what we were doing at the time. And the guy picked me up, you know, let's get it in, right? And he's just like, yeah, I'm just chilling tonight. I just remember thinking, like, how do you do that? You know, like, already at this point, like, there's something in me that's like, what you're doing is wrong. I could see the look. I had seen the look. If you've seen the look, you know what I'm talking about, right? What is wrong with you? Why are you doing this to us? Like, how can we help you? So many conversations like that were had in my household. And to be honest, I could never come up with a real answer to that. The only thing that, you know, the only truth that really would dawn on me in that moment was, like, you know, deep down, it's like, man, I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with me. And, you know, and it was weird. It was like I was wacky and crazy, and they weren't sure what was wrong with me. You know, I mean, are we mentally ill? Are we, there's some alcoholism, some substance abuse. Like, are there, like, what's going on with you? You know, and very quickly I remember, you know, I'm willing to pay whatever consequences I have to pay in the early days. It's a small price for the relief that alcohol gives me. You know, grounded for life, right? You know, you go up into your room, you're not watching TV, you go, okay, right? And I'm just out the back window, you know, and they're wondering why the room smells like booze in the morning, you know, like, I'll pay it, right? Alcoholism, in my experience, it's kind of like I'll rearrange, like I'll adapt to lower circumstances, if that makes any sense, right? Like I'll adapt my mode of living around the consequences, right? I need to feel better. And, like, you know, people put in these roadblocks, right? Like, hey, look, stop, right? Little consequences along the way. And, you know, I'll kind of maneuver around that and, like, you know, have this idea that, like, right, everybody's doing it, I'm a teenager, whatever. No, to be honest, everybody that I knew was doing that. But what happened was I started to notice in the initial first group of friends that I would drink with, Monday morning, they're at class. Their books are open, right? They're bright-eyed, and they're ready, and they're focused on their studies. And they're saying things on the weekend, like talking about all their plans for college, right? And what they're going to do with their career. And I just couldn't show up, right? Like, I'm getting loaded in the bathroom, like I can't even get out of the house without getting loaded, you know? And I'm getting to school, and it's wearing off, right? The effect from, you know, that initial morning. And I'm starting to get real uncomfortable, real restless, real irritable, depressed, right? And they're like, what is wrong with you, man? And so, like, quickly they're like, you know, all right, so we're going to get you into this, like, you know, therapists. And like, I went to, like, a drug and alcohol program at some point when I was in high school. And it, you know, and it was just, you know, I mean, they're giving me all these pills, and, like, you know, trying to fix me. Of course, right? Because, like, obviously something's wrong, right? And I'm so asleep that I've got all these ideas, like, you know, oh, man, it's no big deal. I'm just a teenager. I'm just living life, you know. You know, I'll get out of school, right? I'll figure it out. Like, I'll get a job. It'll be all fine. And it's not okay, you know. And these kids finally, you know, by the time I'm 18, I'm already 3 or 4 arrests deep, right? Multiple underage drinkings, you know, fined, probation, been in drug and alcohol counseling, a therapist, right? And she's giving me these pills, right, which are basically just methamphetamines for kids, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm just, like, chopping them up and drinking whiskey with it, you know, and that's just, you know, what I did. And so, you know, I had burned my life to the ground by the time I was 18. And some people say, like, you know, we had a speaker at our home group, and she was like, you know, I was just like a solid, mediocre student, always. Now, I'll tell you, that was not my experience. Prior to taking my first drink of alcohol, right, really this condition sort of sneaking in prior of like disconnect, right? Like I was a very good student. Like I school well, right? Like I was really good at learning and I was excited about it. My family on my mother's side is very musical, so I had some talent in that area. My mother also is very artistic. Now my dad, he's more of like a right-brained kind of like numbers, math, like guy, and that's not me. But like, you know, I got these creative abilities and like I had a bright future ahead of me, playing in also like a band, right? Punk rock band and like in the jazz band with like electric bass, and I was playing stand-up bass in the orchestra. And you know, had a bright future ahead of me. By the time I'm 18, straight F's, you know. I didn't even go to 70%, 76% in my last year, and didn't have the like ability to even just go and just be like, look, I'm just dropping out, right? Like I hung in there and failed, right? You know, 76% of the year, like it's so painful for me to be in school sober that I have to leave to go get loaded, you know? I can't even bear like 10 minutes of like just grinding on me and like, oh, it's always on me. And like, so what I understood about alcoholism at that point, right, was nothing. I had no idea. Like I was totally asleep. Learning about it and you know, kind of experiencing it in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I've heard some people along the way, like years back, say things like, you know, drinking wasn't my problem, drinking was my solution. And I was like, so some things started to click, right? I'm sitting in these chairs, I'm like, that makes sense, right? I heard somebody say, like, not only do I have an allergy to alcohol, an allergy to sobriety, right? Like, I can't exist in my own skin just without crawling, right? Noticing all the stupid people in the world, just how, like, you know, if I can just, like, fix the external circumstances, right? It's the old delusion I had, right? Like, oh, once I get everything lined up and get off paper and off probation, I can get my parents off my back, right? Everything will be fine. I end up in my first lockup, basically. And the details of it are fuzzy. I have no memory of the year, of the summer after I left high school, right? Not a single memory at all until I get to the psych ward, right? And I'm sitting in there and I'm in the gown, right? And at this point, there's like, this is the year 2000, so you could smoke in there, and they had this little room, right? Where you could go and sit in the chairs and it had a vent, and you could just like chain smoke all day. And I'm in this paper gown with the butt hanging out, right? You know, and I'm like whacked with the slippy, grippy socks, you know, and they're pumping me full of all kinds of medications, and I'm just shuffling around this place. But as I, that's the first time I'd been separated from alcohol, and I'm coming apart in a bad way. I learned later that's, I'm detoxing, right? I had no idea. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm blaming it on the oh, I had a bad reaction to this medication, and like, the doctors were like, oh, okay. And so like in my chart for like 10 years after that was like, can't give him this medication because he has a bad reaction to it. I'm going through detox, right? Like, of course, I'm like coming out of my skin, right? And I'm on the phone, like, you made a big mistake putting me in here, right? I can't wait to, you know, oh, I'm gonna, you know, just, but P.S., send me a carton of cigarettes and $20, please. And that's the level of selfishness I bring to Alcoholics Anonymous. I think, because I put the drink down, that level of selfishness stops, mm-hmm. right? Doesn't, not in my experience. Mm-hmm. So I get out of that place, and I mean, I had an experience with guilt, shame, and remorse pretty bad in there, and I was faced for the first time with who and what I'd become, as much as I can see it, right? And I wanted to do better. I resolved, like, all right. Now, I had a lot of bad ideas. None of them were given to me by Alcoholics Anonymous prior to me being in Alcoholics Anonymous. But at least what I internally thought, which was not true, was that, like, I took care of the physical aspect of it, right, got my health back, and maintained not taking a drink, everything would be okay. Now, not understanding the disease centers in the mind, or really having any experience with my mind bringing me back to the first drink after a period of sobriety, because right, I mean, up until that point, it's like every day I have something in my system, you know? So I'm still craving alcohol, right? Because I put the alcohol in my body, right? I'm like in the morning, it's shouting so loud because, right, it's in my body, it's in my system. Craving's still going, right? So I'm thinking, right, I stop, I won't have the craving. Now, in a lot of ways, that's true. Unfortunately, the disease also centers in the mind. And I didn't understand that at all for a long time. And I get out of that place and I get a little dishwashing job and I'm back with mom and dad and you know, they're cleaning up the mess and I'm working and I'm stacking checks and I'm washing dishes at this little place, right? And now I had a couple of dishwashing jobs up to this place, right? But I'm moving on up, right? I started in like a cafeteria, now I'm at a fancy restaurant, you know? So like I'm moving on up in life, right? I'm up the upper echelon of dishwashers, you know? And this chef, she's real tough, right? You know? And hurry up, come on, get them dishes done, you know? And I'm just like this, you know, like, get it, just grinding on me, right? Resentment, right? Like this person, right? And I can't get these dishes done fast enough, right? And like, I go home and I'm laying in bed and I'm like, I wonder what my friends are doing, you know? And it just starts turning. Now, I lay there for a few seconds and I'm like, all right, that's a trigger, right? You know? So I start fighting that thought, right? Like, no, you promised, not gonna do it. And then I fall asleep and a couple nights later, that thought comes back, right? You know? And I don't know what to do with that, man. And it's like, you know, on the other side, right? There's ease and comfort in that drink, right? You know, I can't fight this off until one day it becomes paramount to all their interests. And I find myself in that house doing the very thing that I promised myself and everyone else. And at this point, I'm telling everybody, like, don't call me. Like, I don't want anything to do with any of you guys. I'm sober now. Like, I got my life figured out. And 2 weeks I lasted out of that place. And I'm back into it. And then somebody asks, hey, you want a drink? Oh, of course, right? And I'm off to the races. And, you know, the last three or four years after that was like that, you know, in and out of places like that. And the delusion I had, at least at the time, when I look back on it now, is that kind of talks in the book about, you know, every alcoholic has a great obsession that one day when they will beat the game. I could control and enjoy my drinking. Well, my experience with controlling and enjoying my drinking was like, there might be one out of every 40 nights where I can kind of control it, you know? But I am not enjoying it at all. And I want more, and I'm very uncomfortable in those times. Now, when I'm enjoying it, there is no control at all. And I'm on the floor somewhere, blacked out, you know? And so, the idea that I had at the time, right, the desperate experiment of the first drink for me, was that somehow I could prove to the world and everyone else that I was an alcoholic, right, long enough for them to get off my back, and I could focus on, right, this delusion that I had that I could line up life in a way that would provide me the relief that I needed, right, because if I had the right job, the right, you know, paycheck, the right love, something nice to show for myself, right? I could come home and just be okay. But my experience never showed that, yet I'm always thinking, my mind is always trying to manipulate the way that I can line things up on the outside that I think that's going to provide the relief that I need to be okay. Now, my story may be a little different than yours, but like, my experience with that is a lot of guys, they come in, man, they get cleaned up real fast. They get the fresh pair of kicks, right? They get the good job. And boy, that stuff lines up real quick. That is not my experience, man. I mean, I can barely hang in there at a place long enough, right? Especially when I'm untreated, because like, you will know that I'm angry. You will know that I'm disturbed. I cannot control my emotional nature one bit. I'm a prey to misery and depression sober. And I cannot hide it behind some kind of facade, right? You know, even to this day, like, you'll know if I'm depressed, you'll see it in my eyes clearly, you know? Now, that's disturbing to people, I've noticed in my experience, right? They're like, what's wrong with you, man? Like, what's wrong with this guy? And again, I'm back then, I'm sober. I'm like, back to this, I don't know. You know, there's just something missing in me. I've never been able to put up too much of a facade against that. Now, once I got to AA, right, became the spiritual man. We'll talk about that later. So I burned my life to the ground 3 or 4 times over, end up in a treatment, a psych ward, jail multiple times, you know, you name it. That's where my runs take me. I have to be physically separated from alcohol. I remember, you know, them putting the handcuffs on me and just being like, maybe this time would be different, you know, and being like relieved for a second. And that's the way I drink, you know, that's the way I run the streets, you know. And I end up going to a couple meetings at Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, seeing you find people, and I did not identify externally with anybody in that meeting, which was quick exit for me, right? Like they're like 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, they look like, you know, bougie, right? Like they got it together, right? You know? And I just didn't identify. Like, if you look like that, you obviously don't have what I have, right? You don't have what I have. And this particular meeting, right, didn't give it much of a chance, right? One little open discussion. Maybe. People were just kind of talking about themselves, but really, like, a what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. So we really get into the drinking stories, right? I'm just hearing, like, how they're dealing with their day and stuff like that. And I'm just like, what is this, you know? And I can say that I tried to share in that meeting because I was in a rehab prior, and they said, put your hand up and at least say, my name is Andy, I'm an alcoholic, and share where you're at. That's what I heard at the treatment center, so I had done that. And, you know, of course, like, at that time, I thought I had some knowledge, right? And I kind of whip it out, you know, and, you know, share, you know, all my vast breadth of knowledge in my last 12 days of treatment that I had acquired, you know. And all that came out was like, man, I am miserable. My life sucks. I hate myself. And I just don't know what to do. That's essentially what I said. And I can remember as soon as that meeting was over, I was out. I was gone before anybody would come up to me. But a funny thing happened inside of me when I was leaving that meeting. A sense of, like, relief came from sharing that truth. Now, that feels good. I don't know about anybody else, if anybody's felt that sense of relief. But I know what will make that feel even better. You know? Like, if that little, oh, my gosh, something's moving in me. Right? I'm going to take that straight to the bar in the dope house. You know? And that's exactly what I did. And the last 2 years of my drinking I became a daily drunk, drinking around the clock from the time I got up until the time I passed out, which, you know, to be honest, was not the morning. I was kind of on a, you know, 5 p.m. to 5 a.m. schedule. If you get me, I'm unemployable, flopping on any couch. At one point, I'd been homeless, living in my car, kicked out of every place I was partying, drinking at, or whatever, doing what we do. So I really didn't have anywhere to go, and I found these two people that were, like, younger than me, and I was, like, really manipulating my way in the situation because it looked like I'm old enough to get booze, and they have the money and all that, and it was a transactional relationship at best. And I have my little girlfriend at the time, and we're doing, you know, what we're doing. And day in, day out, it's come to with the madness on me until I can get that sense of ease and comfort in me. You know what I mean? And I'm not, today's the day, you know? God, this has got to stop. And I go through about my little day or whatever, and that thing happens in me where I revisit that decision I made that morning, you know, and realize, like, how much I was overreacting, and I somehow find myself changing my mind that I'm off to the distributor in the liquor store again with a pile of money, telling myself, like, tomorrow will be the day. Now, some interesting things happened in that time. A seed had been planted, and I'd seen you nice people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you had carried your message to me. And so those bits of truth started coming through. And I remember one night my girlfriend at the time had convinced me, against my better judgment, to go to the bar. Now, I'm a very antisocial kind of person at this point. Like, the idea of going around a big crowd of people was not exciting to me. You know, I was kind of a hole up in a basement kind of guy, drink till you pass out. So she, come on, it'll be fun, right? And, you know, I don't know. She said, I'll buy your drinks. I said, I'm there. we get out, and we go to this Stallions, right? Because she had a friend who wanted to dance at this club. It's this gay bar. I'm like, all right, we want to go here, right? All right, fine. Let's go here. Right? So we're down here, and there's all these dudes in leather and stuff, and I'm just like, all right, whatever. So I'll take, you know, screwdrivers, keep them coming. She's paying, right? And I'm just drinking screwdrivers after screwdrivers. And so I had about 9 of them. I'm starting to get pretty lit. But it's not doing what it used to do, you know? And I'm sitting there, and I'm still in self-centeredness. My head is racing. I'm stuck thinking about myself. So I'm like, you know, more drinks, right? So just give me some beers, right? Keep me coming. Natty Light cans. I think they were like 2 for $1 or something at that point. So I'm just like, yeah, keep coming. I drink 7. I'm literally so drunk, I can barely stand up. But my head is still going. And it dawns on me, like, you're screwed, man. That's the thought I had. I would have loved to tell you that that was my sobriety date. That I saw the light, alcohol stopped working, and I went straight back to you nice people and did what you asked me to do the first time. That is not my story, right? I was so hooked in at that point that I had no choice. And on page 24, top of page 24, it says, alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control. Well, no, it says, an alcoholic is a person that has placed himself beyond human aid or lost the power of choice in drink. We have, you know, our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. At certain times, we are unable to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and the humiliation of even a week or a month ago without defense against the first drink. So not only do I have a problem once I put it in me, I have a problem in with me when I put it down. That, you know, you ever heard people say, play the tape through? God, I hate that, you know? I wish I could just play the tape through. Oh my God. My mind won't let me. I'll tell you, the obsession is a thought that leaps frogs to the front of the list of all my other thoughts. Now, my other thoughts might be, play the tape through, go to a meeting, call your sponsor, pray, read the big book. But I had this idea, how about just one? Now, that would seem insane, right? And it is, but the idea becomes paramount to all other interests. So I might have all these great intentions and ideas of what you people told me to do, but if I'm in the grips of an obsession, right, that is beyond my mental control, that thought becomes paramount to all other interests, and I'm taking that drink, right? I can remember I had been separated from alcohol for 10 years, and I changed my sobriety date of, you know, using drugs at 7 years, right? So, like, I'm in alcohol, I had worked the steps, I'd done the deal, right, I was sponsoring a bunch of guys, right, and then life gets good, and things start, you know, finally getting, like, ooh, wow, this is good, like, of course, you know, you do that deal, like, your life gets better, my life did, at least. Now, all of a sudden, I've got, like, friends, and like, I'm in this city, right, because, like, life, you know, opened it up for me, and I'm, like, hanging out with all these people, going to, like, all these, like, cool shows, listen to all these bands, right? I'm in this scene that I always wanted to be in, and it's like I had arrived, you know, a little by slowly over this course of time, right? Prayer and meditation starts to take a back seat. Working with others becomes, you know, 8 guys to 4 to 3 to none, right? To making approaches goes from I'm reaching my hand out to every newcomer I see, right? That looks like maybe they could need help or something, to, you know, I think I'm just going to let them come to me, right? Traction rather than promotion. By the way, that's our public relations policy, not our sponsorship policy, right? you know, so of course nobody comes to you, right? At least they didn't to me. And I'm not working with any guys. And it says in our book, like, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when all other activities fail. What are those other activities? Meetings, prayer, right? Maybe I'm so blocked, I'm just repeating the same things over and over. My intentions aren't there, right? I mean, I made probably 4 or 5 calls on the way up here, did not get a single person on the line. And I can tell you that the people I'm calling, they are busy on the firing line of life. They are not at my beckoning call. Right? You know, I guarantee you that each one of those people has somebody that has something way more, like a way harder situation that they're trying to work to help them with. To think that, you know, they need to be there to answer my call, like that's going to fix me, you know, when I think they need to be, right? So when all else fails, right, you know, find somebody to help. And I was not helping anybody, and man, I burned my life to the ground worse sober than I ever did drunk. And that's, I hope that's not your experience. But if it has to be, welcome. You know, I mean, I can't tell you a single person that is actually, that I've met in AA that hasn't at some point burned their life to the ground sober. Honestly, at least that's being, that isn't lying about it, or like, you know, putting on a stage character, right? In what way, right? I'm blowing my life up financially, right? I've got, you know, debt, financial amends that I'm not paying yet. I always got a pack of cigarettes. I always got two Monster Energy drinks. I always got a tank of gas, right? I always got money to eat at the diner, right? Selfishness and self-centeredness, right? You know, so my life's not looking good financially. I'm doing everything I can except those little financial amends. And then what happens? Alcoholism starts popping its ugly head out. Now, it didn't come for me in the form of the insane idea that I could drink like a normal person. How it came out to me was like, oh, I'm just going to hop on Tinder, see if I can get a couple dates, right? Because that's what I think I need right at this point. Like, oh, I'll just get the relationship again. I'm falling victim to that delusion again. And I'm lining up people and, you know, manipulating and managing to get what I think I need. And not on top of that, right? And I don't want to be crass, but let's be real. I mean, when I'm not treating my spiritual malady as a spiritual solution, and I still have alcoholism, right? It'll manifest in all kinds of different ways. And at that time, I was a lot younger, a lot thinner, right? And I was a little bit more attractive, I guess, than that. That's not my story now. But I was doing well in that department, you know? Yet I'm still going home and looking at videos. And I can't stop doing that behavior, too. And that's not normal, right? Like, so what happens is, right, that little sex conduct inventory that I had written and that pesky ideal for my future sound sex relationships, that was out the window. And I'm running on self-will and I'm burning people. I'm using women very selfishly. Now, the book gives us a death threat at that point, basically. It says, look, I understand you're alcoholic, right? Okay, you make a mistake. Of course, man, it's going to happen. Are you sorry? Yes or no? If yes, okay. I mean, as long as we're willing to apply the principles of God in that and look to see where I was wrong, right? Clean that stuff up and seek in meditation to allow him to demonstrate through me what he would have me be in these relationships, right? Revisiting that ideal and looking at, like, all right, how would a man of God do this, right? Of course, I'm not doing that, right? It says if I'm not sorry, we are quite sure to drink. And a few months or years later, I moved back out of Baltimore and I'm faced with that same feeling, something is wrong. Now, on the other side of that dash is that piece, is that unmanageable piece. And that eluded me for a lot of years in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Now, how that looks to me is like when I first approached it, it's like, man, I wreck cars, I'm literally being put in places that are managing my life for me, telling me when to smoke, when to go to the bathroom, when to take a shower, when to eat, when to sleep, when to go to meetings. Like, you know, I mean, clearly, like, I'm not a good manager. But it went a little bit deeper than that, right? When I began to look at it from the perspective of the internal condition, right, that I can't. Now, when it centers in the mind, right, you know, and I have these ideas about how things should go, and it doesn't go the way I want, right, or whatever, like a resentment pops in there, right, and it's something that happened like 6 months ago, and then I got this, oh my God, remember what that guy did to you? Yeah, what an asshole, right? My mind would just step in there with all these justifications, and like, man, like, how dare they, and all this stuff, and then I'm running on self-will. Now, I have a mind, like, I want to try to manage that, right? Now, I'm hardwired to manage in that way. You know, that's my experience. Yet my life is unmanageable by me, completely, drunk or sober, in my experience. The idea that I can manage an unmanageable life is pretty insane. Yet I'm hardwired to try to do that. So I have this dilemma. And the answer is to find new management. I mean, this power greater than self is going to be my manager. And to approach that in step three, I had to look at this idea of selfishness and self-centeredness being the root of my troubles, that they arise out of me. And, you know, in even times, looking back at what I thought were harms done to me, right, I can see, looking back, I made a decision based on self, right, which later set this situation rolling, right? And that has been my experience. And looking at that, like, delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of the world if I can just manage the way that I want to manage. And in a lot of ways, it has everything to do with me trying to figure life out, right? The way that I think it should be. And I'm always in conflict when I'm doing that because I have these ideas of how things should be, right? Now, if you have a different idea, and I'm pretty sure I'm right, you know, we're gonna hit butt heads, you know, and that's where my resentments come from, right? My just inability to be teachable, to be sponsorable, right? To concede that maybe I don't know, period. I don't have the answer, right? You know, how many times have people approach me like, I'm good, you know, I'm good, I'm fine, I got it, you know, and then I'm dying inside, right? And so, you know, I take a look at this third step and it's like, you know, I'm coming to it like rather than try to, because I always approach it from this idea of like third step is just a prayer. Like you just make a decision to go through the rest of the steps. And cool, that worked for a time until selfishness and self-centeredness manifested in my life and I had not been able to understand and see how that can play out in my life, right? A lot of things missing on my inventory from those prior years. And so somebody kind of pointed it out to me. He was like, look, you know, you've had faith before, right? Now there's a difference between faith and trust, you know? But even with that, like I know God is there. I can see God work. Sometimes I can feel his presence in me, but I'm still gonna just do what I want, you know? Because that's what life's about, right? I'm just gonna have fun and hang out, and I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this commitment or that. He said, you know, basically when we say this prayer, your life's no longer going to be your own, you know? And this is about going to work for God, right, in the trenches. And so I took that third step prayer honestly, and all sorts of remarkable things happened. And I noticed recently that the promises in step three come prior to taking the third step prayer. I've never seen that before. So it says, when we sincerely took the position that God's going to be our director, I'm just going to be playing the role he assigns. He's the principal, I'm the agent. I represent God, right? And that he's the father, and I'm his child. Like he's going to give me some parameters, and he's going to help me go out and make a beautiful mess, and that's all right, you know? And AA gave me that set of tools, right, to clean that stuff up. And the pain that has come from the failure of my life run on self-will by my own direction, going back and cleaning that stuff up has helped me actually grow in a lot of ways, you know, to become more centered towards the spiritual life. You know, I mean, I've suffered a lot sober. I have, I really have, even recently. And sometimes like that, what seems like a desert, and it's like, some of my biggest growth has come from that, right? Some of my times when I was most close to God has been in the dark, man. I don't know how to describe it. You know, and I had this idea that, you know, walking on a broad highway of life hand in hand with the spirit of the universe was gonna look like being on the beach, you know, and like bikinis and parties and fun stuff, mm-hmm. right? And sometimes it's trudging, man. You know, sometimes it's like, oh, man. As a result of, you know, good sponsorship, 12 Steps Alcoholics Anonymous, and a lot of good people in my life, and power greater than myself working in and through me. I can say that the consciousness of the presence of God is the most important fact of my life today, 100%, 100%. Now, there's some work that needs to be done to unblock me from that. My friend Rory says, and I'm totally going to steal it, right? Like, hiding in the basement, right? I'm not getting any sunlight, right? AA shows me the way out of the basement and the sunlight and the spirit. And, you know, it's not God's fault. You know, if I'm, what I learned and what I became willing to accept was that, like, it's a daily reprieve. There's actions I have to take, 100%. Me standing here, like, this is not me doing this. It's not me making a decision to stop and maintaining it a day at a time with my will. A power is flowing in and through, which has put the mental obsession on the shelf. Essentially, that's it. It's not my power. I'm 100% powerless, as powerless over alcohol as I was the day I walked in here. Do I have power over alcohol on my own? No, I do not, right? There is a power working in and through me, and that power has infinite power, right? But I do not possess that. And I do not want to forget that. Because when I start to think I'm the power, watch out. Right? You know, that's when I burn my life to the ground and others, right? And I have done that sober. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. It's given me a beautiful life. The men that I've got to be of service to, it's just a privilege, man. To have a little pop of an enthusiasm. I was on a 12-step call today, right? Being on the firing line of life. I've had a lot of freedom as a result of this process and this spiritual awakening that I've received and I've been a recipient of. And I've been able to, you know, see guys that I've shared some of that with really take off. And I've seen some of them say, you know what? You know, actually, I got tickets to the Grateful Dead this weekend, so I'm not going to do the steps. And some of them are in the ground. And they had every opportunity to recover. Alcoholism doesn't allow me the dignity to have a real clear picture of what I'm up against. I mean, myself included. Coupled with that seems to be this just utter lack of, like, enthusiasm to participating in the recovery process. I mean, how many times, personally, think about yourself, if you're working the steps out there, how many times is it like, man, get home from work, I'm tired. I don't want to write a nightly review and, like, sit and meditate, put a timer on. I have to, like, force myself. Now, I might be super jammed up with a bunch of resentments that I know are killing me. And I know on the other side of that paper and that meditation is relief and freedom. Yet, I mean, do I really have to do that tonight? You know, like, I mean, I just want to watch Sons of Anarchy, you know, and just, like, eat pie and just lay on the couch and fall asleep, right? An utter inability to not only see what I'm up against, but a lack of willingness and enthusiasm in participating in the recovery process. Now, this guy at my home came out a couple weeks ago, and he shared one thing that I think is really helpful, and I love it. And I think it makes a lot of sense. He said when he was a young kid, his family used to take him to Hershey Park. And they were super excited. He was super excited about the rides and everything, but the thing he was most excited about was those giant lollipops, right? And, you know, she got him all dressed up, his mom or whatever, and they brought him out. He's like, get the lollipop, get the lollipop. She's like, yes, honey, you can get the lollipop. So she says, now be careful with that thing. Don't get it all over yourself, right? And he's like, yes, yes, yes. You know, so he takes a lick, gets the feeling. Takes another lick, right? And then I was like, ah, you know, and he's got it all over. He's just licking this thing all over, mess everywhere, right? That's how this has been for me, right? Because when I finally get to that place where, like, oh, I'm tired, I don't want to do it, and I do it anyway, and on the other side, right, then I get a taste of it. Oh, man, why didn't I just do this yesterday, right? Like, I was jammed up all day. All I had to do was sit and write this stuff out and pray or make that commitment and work with that guy, right? I start to get a taste of that, and it becomes easier and easier and easier to take the actions consistently, you know, and my life is really good as a result of it. I have a beautiful relationship with my family. I have a couple of, you know, niece and nephew. I got to go to Hershey Park with them last week, right? Rory brought me out. I got to go to Vegas, Texas, and travel all these places I never would have ended up. And doing all this AA stuff, right? I got friends all over the country that I can call on at any time, right? That have an answer and are willing to go to any lengths to help me have that experience. And I am the same way for them and any of you here today. And if you're new or not so new, and you're feeling sick and suffering inside, dying inside, there is an answer, and I'd be absolutely happy to share it with you. Thank you so much for having me on. Thank you.
Okay, we would like to thank Andrew for sharing his experience again. And the group would also like to remind anyone who needs a sponsor, please see someone after the meeting. Would anyone who has working knowledge of the 12 steps please raise your hand? And then we please help us close with the Lord's Prayer. Want to do the honors?
Sure. Whose
Father? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever.
Amen. That's right. All right.
So, I'm going to go down to TGI. I got to go.